Blog Talk Radio.
Wonderful. We have Kimberla. Please pronounce your name because I think I mispronounce it every time.
Okay. Kimberla. Like
Kimberla.
An A. Yeah.
Gotcha. Kimberla Lawson Roby on the line to talk about her latest novel. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I just had a conversation with someone. So a simple calling is, this is your second book for the year?
Yes, it is.
And so normally writers release a book a year, but you are pretty much on a schedule for at least four this year. Is that correct?
No, it's two. Yeah.
Just two?
Doing two. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
Maybe 2008 or 2008, actually.
So what precipitated the ramp up from one book a year to two books a year?
Well, you know, originally when I started out, when I wrote my first book, Behind Closed Doors, you know, general contemporary mainstream fiction, the same thing with the second book, you know, still focusing on real-life social issues, which is what I've done with every book. But when the third book came out, Casting the First Stone, which was about my Reverend Curtis Black character, and I never thought that that would be a series. I never planned on writing a sequel, but because readers, you know, continued to ask for more of it, my publisher and my agent, you know, encouraged me to do so, and so I began writing it, and there still ended up being more requests and more requests, and I thought, you know, I still want to be able to write about some other characters and
right.
other scenarios, but I don't want to stop writing my series, and so my publisher at the time, my editor there, said, well, why don't you do a second book of the year, and maybe that would be a novella, you know, wouldn't be the normal size of a novel, and you could get kind of the best of, you know, the two things that you want to do, and so that's really how it began, and so that's why whenever you see the second book, it is just a novella.
Gotcha. So it allows you the opportunity to please your audience with the
mm-hmm.
Reverend Curtis Black and then expand your own personal creativity, which I'm assuming is a good balance, right? You writing the same character, because this is number 13 with
yes,
Curtis Black?
Yes, it is. It
My
is.
Goodness.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So
time has really passed with it.
How many different ways can you examine a character, right? Like this should be a course
right.
in literature.
Well, no, that was my fear, and that was why I never wanted to even write one book, you know,
okay.
of any of my titles, because the question, you know, of course is going to come up, you know, not just with readers, but even with myself, how do I keep this fresh? How do I write something different? But I realize now that the reason it's continued and why I still, after all these years and all these books in the series, that I have readers still waiting for the next or wanting, you know, to know, am I doing one even after Sinful Calling? I've already started to see comments about that, and it's because it has more become a family saga. And so for this particular book, it centers on Curtis's two eldest children and their marriages and their lives. And so you see him, but it's really not his story. And the same with the book last year and the year before.
So it's an examination of, I guess if readers aren't familiar with this, and let me say this, readers would be familiar with it, but people who aren't avid readers, but maybe TV watchers would familiar with this in like the Greenleaf series, where you have a branch family and it branches off into other characters. So you do this with Curtis Black and his family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have talked to you about Curtis Black before, but what intrigues you about going into the lives of the children?
Well, you know, I think especially because Reverend Curtis Black started out, you know, as this man who was consumed with money and power and women. He was standing in the pulpit on Sunday saying one thing and certainly doing something different the other Sundays of the week, or even on Sunday evening. and so, you know, he just wasn't the pastor you would want to have or any of us would. And so as he continued to commit one sin after another and he caused more problems and, you know, he was hurting one person after another and there had to be consequences. And eventually when those consequences came about and he started reaping what he had sown, those scandals and those, you know, areas of embarrassment really started to affect his children. And as they became older, you either saw it happen one way, depending on which child you're talking about. Either the child was really affected in a negative way where it caused lots of emotional problems for them in their life, or you saw a child pick up those ways. And so that's what's happened. So with Alicia, she's really suffered, you know, because she saw so much of what her father has done, and she's done a lot of things like him that has caused her and other people a lot of pain. And now Dylan wants to be just like how his father used to be.
Wow. Wow. So, okay. You feel really connected to not only the characters, but the situations that they find themselves in. Does that empathy come from a personal experience or just the empathy that you carry for others in general life?
It's my empathy that I carry for others in general life, and especially with children, because one of my big beliefs is that whatever parents do, good or bad, it affects children for the rest of their lives. And across the board, over and over, if you're 50 or 60 years old, whatever happened in your childhood, you're still dealing with that, or you do certain things because of that, and I think that will always continue.
It definitely colors how you see the world. And for folks who haven't had an opportunity to meet you, you are probably one of the most inviting spirits when you're out signing books. There's never a moment where, you know, you're too busy or there's too many people, because we've seen the pictures on Facebook and you have like hundreds and hundreds of people at your signings, and you sign every book and take every picture. So I think it's just interesting that you can write characters that are, I guess, different from your personality.
And it is. This is kind of a strange thing. And I never thought so much about that, in all honesty, until years ago. One of my best friends, Lori, her husband, he said to me, he said, "Do you know, Kim?" He's like, "Gosh, it just doesn't even seem like, it doesn't even seem like you could write this kind of thing." And he's like, "There's something wrong with you. Your mind is very twisted," you know. And so we, you know, kind of laughed about that. And it is funny because it is as if I'm writing about things that really fascinate me, and fascinating in a way of, wow, this is great that this has happened. And sometimes it fascinates me and like, wow, how dare somebody even think like that or do something like that, because that's so totally against all of my moral values, all of my Christian and family values. And so I just think it's interesting, but it's also why you see my characters deal with the consequences and they reap what they sow, that you don't get away with treating people badly. You just can't do that in this way.
So your curiosity sends you down a path, and the path always has a resolution of you reap what you sow.
And it does. So you won't always see necessarily a happy ending. And, you know, I always, you know, just really look at the what-if factor. So I may take a real-life issue and see or hear something. And sometimes I've had a couple of books where I've written about my own personal experiences, but I always take it to another level and think, but what if it had happened this way? And that's usually where I want that question answered. You know, what if it was something totally different? How would it turn out in the end?
And it's easy to see how your readers resonate with your writing because, like you said, you ground everything in real life, social issues. And for me, fiction is a wonderful departure. So I love reading about characters that do things that I would never do or say things that I would never say. And you go there with your book.
Yes.
So,
and but the thing, too, though, and this is always kind of funny, Michelle, is what I get from readers, because I write about such bad characters, such flawed characters, those that, you know, make all of the wrong decisions, you know, on so many occasions, is readers want to know, so which one of these are you? You know, who are you?
Oh.
Are you Starlet? Are you Curtis's awful wife? It's like, oh, my gosh, absolutely not. And then finally, at one point, I had a whole group of readers laughing because I said, well, think about it. You've asked me about this character in this book and that one. I can't be all of those people.
All of those, right. But I do wonder, though, Kimbrella, if there was a world of alternate universes where you weren't you, would you like one of the characters that you've written?
You know, that's a hard one, and I don't think so. I don't think so because I do seem to really want to write about somebody who's totally opposite. It's almost as if it's more interesting for me to write about somebody else. I have a cousin, my cousin Janelle, who reads all of my first drafts, and he said, you know, it's kind of like Beyonce and Sasha Fierce. She's like, that's
gotcha.
What I always think about, you know, when I'm reading your book because she's known me since we were little girls, and she's like, this is so not who you are. And she said, I have to remind myself, this is Kim's book. She wrote this, you know. She said, it's the strangest thing in the world. And, yeah, so it's just totally not who I am. And I think if I really wrote a lot more about who I am and what I believe, it wouldn't be as interesting. I don't think that I would likely do that.
Really?
Mm-mm.
But I think it's because you lived your life. I think if other people peered into your life, I think it would be interesting to them. But it's just, you know, it's just your everyday. But I love the expression of the alternate personality in writing because I often meet writers who keep it real, quote unquote, and their books are scary to me. Like, this is real for you? Oh God. Please tell me it's made up.
That's right.
Don't keep it that real, my sense.
No, it's like, because I don't really want to know that about you.
Right. We need a little shame factor. But I do love the alternate personality and that you're allowing yourself to explore without judgment. Like, I mean, the reader has always, and I was talking to Ms. Harper, who is one of our editors, She loves your book because you don't force a reader to judge.
No,
you just make
that's
characters plain and flawed and relatable because, you know, everybody has an option of choice at every junction in life. And, you know, we can all look back and say, ooh, I almost made that choice. Like, she loves the fact that you don't condemn your characters. You just let them be. And she
and
gets
that's,
to
and that's
fall in love with them, hate them, and then fall back in love with them.
Yeah, and that's my hope. That's my prayer. You know, every time I'm writing that, my readers will be able to relate that, you know, yes, it's fiction, and yes, we want to entertain as novelists, but that there will be a message and that somebody, you know, if not the person reading it, somebody around them that they know will be helped. Because for me, I've had moments where I've chosen a certain topic just because I think, well, you know what, we haven't seen a lot of this. We, you know, people don't talk about it enough, and we need to talk about a certain topic. And I'll learn something or even change my own thinking about it because of or interviewed someone. I'll give you one real example is whenever I have written about domestic violence, you know, thinking in my mind, okay, I was in a situation like that before, and I was in it for a very short period of time, and I got out, and then, you know, I kind of got back in and tried it again, thinking it would be better, but I got out in a matter of months again. And so in my mind, I thought, well, this is what you do. If you get in that situation, you know, maybe months, you know, a few months or a year or less, you're out of it. And
right.
I realized in talking with other women who had gone through it, no, it's not that simple for every single woman. I didn't have children with the person, you know. I wasn't dependent on a person financially. And so you can't judge another person just because that's not what your issue was and what your situation was.
Right, right. And it is very different having an opinion about it or even an experience. It's always telling when someone has experienced something, they think it's universal. And that doesn't mean that your experience is just like my experience. So you could write about domestic violence in 50 different books and have 50 different, you know, perspectives on it, right?
Yes, there's no doubt. And, you know, I often think about my grandmother and my mom. You know, when I was younger, teen years, even in my 20s, and you'd say, oh, you know what? Oh, my gosh, look at this person. You know, I would never do that. I would never do that. I would never do that. And they used to say, honey, just keep on living.
Keep on living.
Yeah, just keep on living. Oh, I could literally hear them, Michelle. They're both gone, you know. God bless their souls. But
yes.
They were so, so right about it.
But they were so right.
Moments come to pass. I have.
Yes.
I've done things I said I would never do or
never do.
But I was never put up with. Yeah.
And it's like, and I had a conversation with my cousin the other day, and she said, we've become those women. We've become those women that we used to condemn when we were younger, but we just had not lived life long enough.
That's
and I was like, you're exactly right.
Isn't
that something?
It is. It really is.
So we have started this new, so you'll be the first author to get these five questions. And it's the five things about Kimberla Lawson Roby. So just going to ask you the questions. If you need a moment to think or if you want me to go to a different question, just let me know.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And so just think, you know, the actor studio where he asked those questions at the end, that's kind of where I got the inspiration.
Oh, okay. I love that. Yeah, I love it.
Okay. If you did not write in this genre, what genre would you want to try?
Probably.
And I put your genre as, I mean, you're commercial fiction, but you're definitely spiritual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And I think that's likely what I would still do fiction-wise, but what I would probably want to try is something nonfiction. That's the one thing.
Really?
Not written anything better along those lines. Yeah.
Wonderful. Is there a book or subject matter that you would never write about?
Erotica.
Really?
I could definitely say erotica.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there an edit that has happened that you regret?
Oh, my gosh. This one, I never even have to think twice. If you had just asked me on a moment's notice on the street, this will always be my answer. The ending of A Taste of Reality, which is my fifth book, I had written the book. I had submitted it. You know, my agent at that time would read my works before I submitted it to my publisher. And she said, I think things are kind of tied up just a little too nicely at the end. You know, I think you should probably rethink something. I was like, no, you know what? I don't think so. This is literally the ending. The character has just endured and gone through so much.
Right.
You know, she's got to have at least some peace and some happiness at the end. I just believe that's what readers will want for her. And she said, no, I just think, you know, you're not comfortable with the idea of changing it, so, you know, you probably don't see that. And so I thought, okay, this is my agent. It's still early in my career. She edited Stephen King, you know, when she was out.
Wow.
And become president of a major imprint, you know, one of the big five. And
right,
so
why not
short,
trust
I changed
that?
It.
Right.
I changed it. And, you know, my editor and the publisher, they were fine with it. They published it. And I was literally in tears as the reviews started to come in saying, love the book until the last chapter. Enjoy the book until the last chapter. Wow, can't believe she went through all that. And still, you know, there's going to be a question in terms of how things turn out for her. And I was devastated. I wouldn't have been as devastated had I made the decision. I was devastated because that's not what I had written. I had written the ending that they were looking for. And so I started forwarding those messages to my agent, and it became a joke with us, you know, down the line. She said, you know what, I am so sorry, Kim. She said, and I will never, ever ask you to change something that you really feel in your heart, you know, that you're supposed to write. And she never did. And so now I don't. I mean, I'm glad to have suggestions from editors and even my readers, but I still go with what I believe it is I'm supposed to put out there.
I ask that question because so many writers struggle with allowing people to help make their book better. So there is that process, like you said, your cousin reads your first drafts and, you know, somebody who helps you get the book along. And then there is that, I guess, the vision of the book or what you wanted the book to do in the world. And you have to make those decisions about marketability, sellability, you know, what's going to keep your career going, what's going to grow your fan base. And the fact that you're still with your agent shows that, you know, you all have a wonderful partnership and that everybody thought that that was the best way to go.
And I was until, unfortunately, she passed away.
Oh, no.
And so, but yeah, but no, but I was, you know, with her many years up until that point. I mean, the majority of my career, and it was great because she was so, you know, I guess, really, really, she was such a listener. I guess that's really what I should say. And, you know,
gotcha.
She believed in what it was I was doing. And I remember once she said, you know what, you know your audience. And she's like, I know that now, and that's what we're going to go with. And even now, along with my cousin, I have three others. So I have four first readers who read every book as soon as I finish it while my editor at the publishing house is reading it. And sometimes when they say, you know, I would have liked to have seen a little more of this, or I really would have liked to have heard this in the ending, and I go with the majority, you know, because part of me is, you know, I won't change what I think is supposed to be in there, but if I think something is missing, you know, that's when I know I really need to be open to what the majority, because if you get three or four saying one thing, that's likely going to represent all readers. So.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. So what encounter as a writer has made you the proudest?
Winning the NAACP Image Award.
Really? Yeah, that had to be awesome.
It really was. It was.
What is the one thing you wish your readers knew about you or your writing that they probably don't know?
That's another easy one. Well, it's that with every single book I write, I still fear that it won't be good enough for them.
Really?
Every single book, including the one I just submitted 2 weeks ago.
So you just write through that fear and then turn it in and just, you know, pray and see what happens.
I honestly do, because when I'm writing it, I'm feeling like it. But when I do that final read, then the fear is at an all-time high, because now I'm really reading from page one to the end, and it doesn't feel any better to me. And, you know, it's like, well, you know what, I got to submit it. You know, I got a deadline. I got a book that I have to turn in. And, you know, thankfully, it's always turned out okay, you know.
Right.
There's that fear that I almost wish that I didn't. And I think I wish that the fear would go away, because it's gotten worse over the years instead of better.
Isn't that something? The longer your career goes, the fear is one day they won't read it.
Yeah, that you think one day that day will come where they'll say, oh, this is it. She's done. You know, she's lost it now, you know.
Wow.
So who's my next author that I want to read? Because it's not, I mean, you do. You just have all kinds of thoughts like that.
Yeah, I mean, but writing is an isolated process, and you don't know until it's released. Like, you don't get the option of, like, a playwright to kind of run it through and then say, oh, you know what, nobody laughed at that. So let me take it back and rewrite it. You really just have to release it to the world before you know.
And you do, and that's why if I'm at an event, or even if I get a comment online, or I'm, you know, communicating with someone through social media, and they say, you know, I really enjoyed it, or I couldn't put it down, or when is your next book coming out? And when I say to my readers, you have no idea how you made my day, that I need that kind of encouragement.
Good.
Because that allows me to keep going on. Because until they tell me that, I honestly don't know it. And honestly, I have to say, I don't believe that.
That's amazing. But that's how creatives are. But I will say this, and I have followed your career for a while, and I think the first interview I did with you was probably a few years ago, but I've known you for years.
Mm-hmm.
You are one of the smartest authors I've ever met. And I think I've expressed that to you because it's not, you understand the business of publishing. Mm-hmm. You write well, you are a great writer, but beyond that, you are a wonderful marketer. And we were having a conversation, I think Troy with AALBC, and I were having a conversation, and he was asking me, who are some of the authors that I believe are great at getting the word out about their book and, you know, creating fan bases? And you and Eric Jerome Dickey were two that just popped off the top of my head because you connect with readers in such a way, and it's genuine.
Thank
so,
it is. I mean, I love my readers. I mean, I wouldn't do this without them. You know, lots of writers will say, you know what, I would write even if I didn't have a reader, if I didn't sell any books, because I do it for the love. And that's just not true for me. I do love what I do, and I love to get the stories out there. But it's the reader's response and my relationship with them. And that's what brings the real smile to my face.
Well, if anybody is listening to this podcast and gets an opportunity to meet Kimbrella, you really honestly need to go out and meet her. Like, it's one thing to read your books, but I think people need to connect with the creator of the art. And I think it's the you know, you talk about the relationship, but it's building a partnership, and it helps the career and it helps the person who's digesting the information. So good luck with this new release. So now we have the novella at the beginning of the year. So this
yes.
is Curtis Black. So we will get another book in 2017?
Yes, January 31st. The title is Copycat, and that's the
book.
I just submitted. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. And if you're in Atlanta, we would love to host you for a Wine and Words. So
wonderful.
If you have time in your schedule, we'd love for you to come by.
Well, thank you so much. I will look forward to that.
All right. I look forward to seeing you, Kimbrella. Thank you so
okay,
much.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.